fathers and the forsaken children, and let them come quickly, for a voice of crying is heard out of Zion. For we are greatly confused, for death has come into our ghettos to cut off the young men and women from the streets of Philadelphia, New York, L.A., Georgia, Ohio, Florida, Mississippi, and throughout America, South America, the Caribbean islands, Africa, Asia, and all over the world. So return unto me, thus saith Yah, and I will return unto you, O my people.
Welcome, listeners, to Time for an Awakening on Black Talk Radio Network, New Media for the New Millennia. This is a history and current events program from a cultural perspective. We find this program necessary because Hosea 4:6 states, "My people are destroyed for the lack of knowledge." But we as a people can turn this around. Proverbs 4:7 states, "Wisdom is the principal thing. Therefore, get wisdom. And with all thy getting, get an understanding." Again, welcome to the program this evening with your hosts, Brother Elliot and Brother Richard. The number to reach us to join the conversation this evening is 215-490-9832. That's 215-490-9832. We're streaming live at several locations. You can go to timeforanawakening.com, which is the home page, and listen to the live stream from that location. You can go to www.blacktalkradionetwork.com/timeforanawakening. Again, it's www.blacktalkradionetwork.com/timeforanawakening, and catch the live stream there also. You can go to ourradionetwork.com. Again, that's ourradionetwork.com/timeforanawakening. That's in the Black Belt. And listen to the live stream there also. or you can download TuneIn to any of your handheld devices. TuneIn is a free app. And in that TuneIn search engine, you can type in Time for an Awakening. There you'll see the icon, and you can stream the program live, even into your car if you have the Bluetooth connection or the auxiliary connection in your automobile. Again, it's Time for an Awakening radio program with the live stream on the TuneIn app. Drop us an email at timeforanawakening@gmail.com. Again, that's timeforanawakening@gmail.com. Time for Awakening also has a fan page on Facebook. In that Facebook search engine, just type in Time for an Awakening radio program. There you always have interesting content being posted daily. And do me a favor, before you leave that page, just hit that like button. That's Time for an Awakening radio program with the fan page on Facebook. And Time for Awakening Media is there also. Chock full of new podcasts of some of the programs. Always new information posted. And more things added on a daily basis. So check it out. Timeforanawakening.com. Again, that's timeforanawakening.com. We'll take you straight to Time for an Awakening Media. Tonight, we're scheduled to have a special guest join us. Attorney, organizer, and founder of the Black Lawyers for Justice, Malik Zulu Shabazz, is scheduled to be with us this evening. So we'll look for his call somewhere in between 7:30 and around that first half hour. He should be joining us if nothing has come up. But otherwise than that, we will shift gears and go into open forum because he is our scheduled guest for this evening. But that doesn't stop it. If he's not on, we'll shift into open forum. So we'll be right back to get things started after a brief word from our sponsors.
Mr. Moderator, our distinguished guests, brothers and sisters, our friends and our enemies. Everybody is here.
You are listening to Time for an Awakening Media, part of the Black Talk Radio Network. For podcasts or live programming, hit them up at timeforanawakening.com.
All Insurance Incorporated, an African-American owned and operated insurance agency in business for over 20 years, located at 231 Southeastern Road in Glenside, PA, with other offices in Germantown and West Philadelphia. Call now for commercial insurance quotes, homeowners insurance quotes, automobile insurance quotes, notary and tax services, representing over 15 major A-rated insurance companies, offering a discount on all notary services when you call in for a free quote. Call this number, 215-885-2444. That number is 215-885-2444. 215-885-2444. All Insurance Incorporated.
Before your roof becomes unruly, call Dooley. Dooley Brothers, specializing in shingle, rubber roofs, gutters, downspouts, and vinyl sidings. Call for your free estimate today. 215-224-3882. That's 215-224-3882. Dooley Brothers Roofing, the roofing experts you can trust. That number again, 215-224-3882. 215-224-3882. Before your roof becomes unruly, call Dooley.
Overworked? Suffering with an underperforming company, headache customer, staff, or vendors? Or are you a startup who wants to get it right the first time and avoid the costly mistakes? We turned a $24,000 a year odd job handyman service into a seven-figure high-end custom home builder and commercial contractor licensed and operating in three states. This is just one transformation created for entrepreneurs like you in various industries around the country. Not what you're used to from accounting and business consulting? Well, welcome to New Business Solutions. If you're ready to go beyond advising, coaching, and training and get implemented results, call 301-244-9072. Let New Business Solutions apply the best comprehensive administrative, accounting, operations, human resources, management, sales, and marketing to help you actualize your vision for yourself and your company. From anywhere nationally, call 301-244-9072, spelled new as in numerous, on your device right now. Book your free consultation at newbusinesssolutions.com.
History is a clock that people use to tell their political and cultural time of day. It is also a compass that people use to find themselves on the map of human geography. History tells of people where they have been and what they have been, where they are and what they are. Most important, history tells a people where they still must go and what they still must be. The relationship of history to the people is the same as the relationship of a mother to her child.
From antiquity to the present, our people need to develop a new paradigm. It's time for an awakening. With your host, Brother Elliot. Sundays, 7 p.m., Fridays at 8 p.m. For podcasting or live program scheduling, hit us up at timeforanawakening@gmail.com. Welcome back to Time for an Awakening. Before we get started with our program this evening, I want to welcome in my co-hosts, Philadelphia activists and tour guide at African American Museum here in Philadelphia at 7th and Arch Street. Brother Richard is with us. Brother Richard.
Yes, sir, Brother Elliot.
How are you, sir?
I'm doing fine. I'm re-energized and tired after this weekend of, as you know, the ASCAC conference was in, national conference was in Philadelphia, the Association for the Study of African Classical Civilization. And I was able to attend all the days up to the business meeting from Thursday. A lot of information, a lot of creative thinking, and trying to understand, place ourselves in a historical, a longer historical and moral and principled position as we move forward. So it was really energizing and joyfully so draining.
Well, listen, we because I did get a text from Brother Malik Shabazz, secretary. He was in some late meetings. He should be still joining us. But if not, like I said, we can we'll spin off into open forum. But I would love to kind of get some information on what transpired at the ASCAC conference. I did talk with a few of the other listeners that said that they attended. In fact, they said that they saw you there. But Brother Richard, give the listening audience a little background on some of the things accomplished there. I knew it was a lot of scholars from around the country. Brother Beatty, Brother Greg Carr was there. In fact, they were the some of the chairs, along with the regional chair here. But go ahead.
Brother Mario Beatty is the president, and Greg Carr is one of the first vice presidents. And then there was the organizing host, the regional president, Ron McCoy. Mm-hmm. And I want to give a shout out to Ron and all the people that assist them, Community College. And I apologize for not having the sister's name in front of me, who is the community liaison for Community College. From what I can see as a participant of the conference, Community College and the sister did a excellent job in a host, you know, assisting the regional president and all the members that were to support and making it work. I mean, giving them more time. There was supposedly a little crisis in relationship to parking, you know, because in Philadelphia, parking is no joke, right?
Oh, yeah.
you know, but the parking lot, Community College parking lot was made from what I can understand, being a non-driver, non-spaceship owner, that it made the accommodation for, you know, running into the evening for those who had parking. So, you know, and that's one indication. Just and everything just like really flowed well as far as the logistics and layout. So, again, I want to give a shout out to not just the administrator of community, but the Black Student Union of Community College. Brother spoke, you know, in the opening in the community Thursday night. They had a community opening where members from the community can come to the conference free. And I didn't know that. And they had one of the keynote entertainment pieces. I don't want to say pieces. Cultural. Musical ambassadors of the maintain the continuity of African traditional music and drumming and dancing, and the community in North America and around and throughout the Americas, which is the Universal Dance Ensemble, and we had them speaking. I think you, Elliot, had went to one of their had done a live broadcast at one of their events. For Universal Dance Ensemble,
mm-hmm.
And they did an excellent job in the community. Tony Montero, who's one of the he's based locally but known nationally as the preeminent scholar around Du Bois, spoke at the opening community event, and that was like really, you know, with the hosts of all the community members, the community drummers. You know, Philadelphia is interesting in my opinion, for those who don't know, especially those who are out of the country. Philadelphia has a strong cultural community, and you wouldn't think it, right? If you would think this here urban matrix of Black people just exists. But Philadelphia has a strong, and when I say cultural, I'm saying cultural in the sense of the cultural arts, cultural ethnic identity and spiritual practice, and cultural as far as in the educational institution, as far as whether it be about freedom schools or independent schools in relaying the African traditional understanding as far as values and just identity, character building. And that was a part of the event. And then Friday, the opening with Brother Mario, and he was, speaking to what the basis of the conference was about, the intellectual warfare against the assault on African humanity. And, you know, as Mario did so well in being able to really reemphasize to us to how important it is to maintain this rigorous study in order to fight against the assault that is taking place on African people at this present time. Right now, you know, the presentation kind of developed and staying within that, the Egyptian Kemetic understanding of what we should be, how we should be looking at the world, our own humanity, and how we shouldn't get lost in all the things like this, this phrase that comes up about the, talking about the continental Africans or the continental African states being at shithole countries, excuse my expression.
But you know that this whole thing developing is part of a continuous development of our people moving forward. Brother Malik Zulu Shabazz was with us, I guess, in November when he went down to defend the young brother that was beaten down there at that Charlottesville rally. He told us then about what was going on in Washington in April, and Brother Malik Shabazz is with us tonight to expand upon that and tell us about some other things going on also that we need to know about. Brother Malik, how are you, sir?
I'm doing all right. I got a cold this evening, but I'm happy to be on with you.
Oh man, I'm glad that you're back with us, Brother Malik. You know, when you was with us in November, you told us about the upcoming men's national convention and 10,000 Black Men's March in April from the 18th to the 22nd in Washington, D.C. A lot of those plans that were talked about then are finalized. The event is happening and about to happen in another month. Before we touch on a lot of different issues that have been going on, talk about the upcoming event. You know, I'm looking at some of the paperwork, and I see this is really extensive. You've done a lot of work yourself and the other organizations that you've managed to put together to cooperate in a form of operational unity. I'm looking at some of the people involved and some of the workshops involved. Talk about some of the things going on from the 18th all the way to the 22nd.
Thank you so much for having me on, and thank you for allowing us to speak about the National Black Men's Convention, which is open to the entire black family from April 18th, the 19th, the 20th, 21st, and 22nd at Shiloh Baptist Church in Washington, D.C., and the 21st, the 10,000 Black Men March in Southeast Washington, D.C. at the Big Chair. The Big Chair, located 2100 Martin Luther King Avenue. Yes, my brother, for several months, through these cold months of winter, we have been striving and struggling to bring forth the National Black Men's Convention and 10,000 Black Men's March for certain critical and core reasons that are not necessarily so sexy, for lack of a better word, in the news. But they are principled and core reasons, some of which you have talked about, and we are steadily dealing with them. Gentrification in Washington, D.C., and in black communities around the country needs a force and a base, a fighting force and a plan and a base.
Yes.
That's why we're having this convention. The killing and the violence in our communities needs more attention, more coordination, more of a united front, and that's why we're having this march and this convention. We need a united front. We need our best and brightest minds from around the nation. That's why we're bringing them here. And so such core values as building a united front, stopping the violence and the killing, having black men in the spirit of the Million Man March take firm responsibility for our conditions, education and re-education and rites of passage and cultural system is needed. Many things are needed, my dear brother, that we all value, and that's why we're having the National Black Men Convention and the 10,000 Black Men March, because the struggle continues.
You know, I see that, I mean, you brought folks together here to cover just about every aspect of life for our people here in this United States. You're dealing with the Economic Empowerment Summit on day three. You're dealing with the Reparations Summit on Sunday. I guess that's the last day of the convention itself.
Yeah.
I'm looking at some of the workshops, manhood training, building a united front up for these organizations, surviving police encounters with training, independent schools, again, the Reparations Forum, Pan-African organizing, economic network building, self-defense, physical fitness with dietary help, STEM technology forums. I mean, listen, brother, you're out here working, and you brought some of these other folks here to start bringing these things in close. You know, we talk on this program a lot to our listening audience that it is things going on around these cities where we dwell and in the outlying areas where we dwell. But it's not a network, a unified network of the people working together. I see here that this is at least a start of our people starting to network and work together. Talk about that, brother.
Yes, my dear brother. Thank you so much for your spirit today. We must network. We must have time where we spend time with each other and talk with each other and build with each other. And that's what the National Black Men Convention here in Washington, D.C. is about. We deserve time for Dr. Tony Browder and Dr. Cornel West and you and I and the grassroots brothers from the streets and others who are coming from South Africa, Baba Buntu and others, and Dr. Juwanza Kunjufu, mm-hmm. Professor Griff. We got psychologists. We, first of all, as men, brother, we need to come together to talk with each other, to feel each other, to embrace with each other, and to heal with each other, and to plan our future. That's one thing that you will definitely get out of the convention as a man and as a member of our family. We want to make it clear that there's space and here also for the sisters and also, and mothers, bring your sons. This is a whole rites of passage. Now, Dr. James Smalls has talked about the importance of different priorities, and Dr. Jeffries, who will be with us also. So we structured a convention. Day one is a summit for education and health.
Okay.
Day two actually is the summit for economics and finance.
Okay.
Day three is dedicated to justice and basically justice and politics. Day four, the march, is dedicated to violence and killing. And day five is dedicated to reparations and repair. So you have from 12 noon to 10 p.m. each day. You have workshops on every day. You have, like in the day, you have on any of these days, and you can check our website at blackmensmovement.org. What you're going to be able to have is workshops on finance, workshops on credit counseling, workshops on where you can deal with the elements of mental health and getting help where you need help. There's going to be able to get your blood pressure checked and all kind of things throughout the convention and in the daytime, workshops. And then at night, our scholars and our leaders present at night. So it's an education and health summit on day one, where all the great focus is on education, and we're going to be unveiling a new online university on that day. An online university called Shabazz University. And many of these scholars that you read about that are coming to our convention, they are on the faculty because we must have institutions. So we're trying to come out of the convention with some institutions. And then, of course, on that night, we hear from all of our great professors as they define what it is today. The subject that night, the first night, April 18th, defining black manhood. And what is it? What does it mean to be a black man? And what educational tools do we need right now to help lead the way for our families and our children? On day two, you got economics and finance. Dr. Claude Anderson, and we're expecting him to come in on the big screen.
Mm-hmm.
And live in person, we have as our keynote Dr. Boyce Watkins, Dr. Brother Haki Shakur Ami. We have and many other great entrepreneurs that are on the program. Mike Roberts, the great billionaire hotel owner, is coming in from St. Louis. So all day it's about money and finance and economics on day two. Day three is Dr. Cornel West and myself and Hashim Nzingam, minister of the New Black Panther Party, and Sister Ilyasha Shabazz, the great daughter of Malcolm X. It's going to be a great night of unity Friday the 20th. That's the keynote. But all in the daytime is workshops and legal training on dealing with the police and the criminal court system and the justice system and getting expungements for black men and services that we need. There's services available throughout the convention so you can get the legal, the clinical, and the actual help that you may need to solve a problem. It sounds like a lot, but it is a lot. Mm-hmm. Then on Saturday, my dear brother, is split into two parts. You have the Save Our Son, Stop the Killing rally in Southeast Washington, in the heart of the gentrification zone, and in the heart of the zone where most of the killing takes place, not down on the mall. We rally there from 10 a.m. until 3 or 3:30 p.m., a strong rally, with services at that rally. And then we march to 1600 Pennsylvania Avenue for our White House rally, which starts at 4 o'clock. And from 4 o'clock to 8 o'clock, we have arranged a specific sound stage and platform right there in front of Donald Trump's door, right where he can see when he looks out his window, 10,000 black men march, and the black men of America and 100 black organizations and all of us will have our rally for self-determination. And of course, our rally of condemnation of this wicked, racist ruler in the White House. You know we can't have a black men's convention and 10,000 black men march and leave out this Ku Klux Klan type grand wizard, toupee-wearing evil man that sits at 1600 Pennsylvania Avenue. So we do that all day Saturday. That should be powerful, and our message will go out to the world from the White House. Then we come back to Repair Sunday, Reparation Sunday. We have Dr. Jeffries coming, attorney Mustafa Al Ansari, human rights specialist that are going to take our a vote at this convention of the 100 organizations and take our case to the United Nations with a plebiscite, a vote, declaring ourselves an independent people and working our case. And then coming the Honorable Silas Muhammad, a longtime reparations worker, and he's the leader of the Lost Found Nation of Islam. He's maybe have been overshadowed by Minister Louis Farrakhan, but Silas Muhammad and his work at the United Nations, his work on behalf of reparations, it deserves attention. And so he's teaching on Sunday, and many other delegates from around the country, from all over. They're coming from different states in Florida and New York and Ohio and Chicago and Los Angeles. And the strongest activist in America will be checking in and speaking as delegates. So it's a real strong convention, brother.
Okay.
And we're still in the midst of our campaign, and we're driving hard with everything we got to help you all to understand that this convention and this march will help in the liberation of our people. And lastly, I would say I've been working in the trenches for 30 years. So I would like it to be taken that whatever we put together is permanent. It is not just a march and a convention for that day. The partnerships we build on this radio show, dear brother.
Yes.
These are partnerships for life. We have to have a united front, and we have to pull the dry bones together. I'm sorry for speaking so long.
No, listen, because I want to bring in some other issues that relate to your work before I kind of go off on some of the other issues. Richard, did you want to jump in?
And I appreciate the work that you're doing, Brother Shabazz. And when you were here the last time, we were talking about, you know, you and what you had to go through in order to build that network. And I think that it's important for the listening audience, wherever we are, to kind of hear the kind of work when we're talking about bringing folks together to making a convention like this happen. So can you give some examples of the different groups that you had to or the team had to work with in order to come together to make this happen? I'm assuming that you want to reach also the Washington, D.C. community, energizing and maintaining a foundation once the convention is over. So you set that up in producing the convention itself. So can you share with us that walk with us a little bit how that work is so we can see it?
I appreciate you very much. This convention, yes, sir, it has a twofold approach. It appeals to the Washington, D.C. community and its current needs. And it also appeals to our national needs. That's why we have national scholars and leaders coming in. But specifically here, and specifically for the part about the 10,000 black men's march, it directly affects the most needy parts of the city, and it does it in this way. 2 weeks ago, it had come to our attention that a gentrifying developer who is building in the black community, amongst many cranes that are lined up across the city, cranes that dot the whole landscape around D.C. as we are in a development boom. And gentrification is having a negative effect. It's having just changing the city in some cases for the better and in many cases for the worse. And so this developer was not hiring the workers in the specific from this city and the black workers who live in that area, Ward 8. He was not complying with subcontracting requirements. He put in a Starbucks in there, and they were otherwise doing what developers do in this city, which is do as they please. But the 10,000 black men march said that on our platform is gentrification. And as we work with our march right down the street, we're not going to allow these white developers to run roughshod in our community, and we not check them. So we took up the cause with our councilmen and our coalition that we have built with local residents. And today it's on the front page of the Washington Informer newspaper, and it shows us shutting down Bozzuto Construction, shutting down the construction site 100%. I mean, we were out there just for a couple of days, and within less than an hour and a half, we had completely shut down a 100-man construction site and ran all of the foremen off, ran all of the laborers off, and forced them to pack their bags with the strength of this demonstration, which was rooted and started by the 10,000 Black Men's March, who is right now, it's a organized force of sisters and brothers that take care of business around the city. We're a growing threat, if you would get what I'm saying. I say all that to say that we are not here just to have a march. The march will take the amount of demonstrators and organizers that we have, and it gives us a great platform to get more. But our intention right now, we're revolutionaries, brother. We're revolutionaries. We're out here to change this condition. If we have to shut somebody down, that's what we're doing. If we have to do what we're planning on doing, building a people's development corporation where we can share in the development of our community, that's what we're working on. We are community workers in the city who happen to be having a 10,000 black men march, which will swell our ranks and swell our numbers so that we can build a strong force in this city that will save our people. That's the local situation. And nationally, once again, I'm a man that travels and has a program and a work around America and around the world. So the reason why I can call, by God's grace, people from all around the country is because I've been there with them, work with them, and have that capacity to call them in. They will carry our program and our unity back to their cities and their areas. So the 10,000 Black Men March National Black Men Convention may in fact produce new hope that a united liberation front for constructive action can take place. Kind of like what Minister Malcolm X wanted, a common front against a common enemy. You know, you and I who are on this phone, we may agree with a lot. We may not agree with everything amongst each other, but there's so much we agree on. And I think that we and I have been placed in a unique condition to kind of merge a united front across this country. So when you need help in New Jersey, you need help in New York, your brothers and sisters from around the country have your back. For those who are on this line, as I close on this question, if you support this convention and this march, my friends will be your friends. If you will be my friend and support what we're doing, my friends will become your friends. And where you live and need help at, in either education, litigation, demonstration, building of a nation, then we can dispatch troops and help around the country and from our headquarters. And then when you're fighting these pitched battles across the country, you have national support and help from a real live national action network. And that's this 10,000 Black Men Marching Movement. That's the vision that we're working with, my dear brothers.
You know, Brother Malik, you spoke about gentrification as a part of the convention. And I totally agree with you that we need some type of unified approach to how we're going to deal with this. And I'll give an example. Here in the city of Philadelphia, you have, and we had some of the activists on, and we're going to get them on again within the next couple of weeks. North Philly section of Philadelphia, predominantly black. They plan to build a football stadium up there. The neighbors don't want it, but it's a part of the gentrification that's been going on all over the city. Philadelphia is full of black elected officials. Some of the folks thought that the black elected officials was on their side. until, you know, they find out what's really going on. But the thing I'm saying is this, because I think it's going to come down to this, and it has already come down to this because you're talking about it. You almost read my mind. It's time that we need some type of unified approach to go in these places, on these work sites, and shut these sites down. No more can these people come into our communities. You see white guys from out of the city in other neighborhoods of the city bringing in workers that don't look like the community and working and building in the community while young men and older men stand on the corner or stand outside and watch them. They need to be involved in shutting these sites down, and I'm glad that it's an organized force like the Black Lawyers for Justice involved in helping them do this with at least some legal help or legal advice in going in and shutting these sites down.
Yes, sir. Thank you so much. We're just trying to set an example and then share. We want to, first of all, share what we do with others. Our main resource as Black people right now is not wealth, because we haven't organized to use wealth as a weapon. And really, our main resource is our people. We don't have land. We don't have power, but we do have people, and in the people is power.
Mm-hmm.
So in all of these communities, even though we are without means, the main thing that the power structure fears and that the developers fear and they all feel is the people who are organized. Even the politicians fear that because they're trying to run for election or get back in the office. So whoever can organize the people the best and organize the people the strongest is going to begin to wield some power and influence and be able to, as you say, shut some people down and make power moves in these cities. And so, brother, it can be done, and
yes,
it must be done.
Yeah.
And then that's why we're doing what we're doing, to share and to help people to know how to fight back, you know, in this hour. There has to be some fighting back. And then there has to be another constructive model. See, we are not, you know, like you demonstrate on, like we shut down these construction sites for a few days. Then they sat down with the young, bold councilman who went out on the front lines with us, Brother Trayon White. And you have to have a councilman like that will put his body on the line for an issue. Now, they have come to the table now begging and to temporarily try to resolve things by lining up jobs and other things that they say that they're going to do to reform their practices. However, that's not exactly what we're striving for. That's something for the local residents. But like Minister Malcolm X would teach us, that's the token part of it. The substantive part of this that we must have and we cannot compromise on, my dear brother, is we must own the development process. We must benefit from the development process that is currently taking place in the inner cities of our communities. Millions of dollars are coming in. Changes are coming in. And the question is, A, will we be able to live there? But B, the bigger question is, can we benefit from the development? I mean, it's one thing to try to say, can I hang on to my apartment? Are you going to drive the rents up? And that is a struggle, and that's important for working class people. Very important. But the bigger picture is, in a city like my city is, let's just say you got 50 million, 100, you got almost $1.5 billion of development that's going to be taking place in Ward 8 alone over the next few years, 20 sites, and $1.5 billion on these sites. And much of the money is being matched by the city government. For example, this site I'm telling you right now, they say allegedly that the developer got the land for $1. And then the city chipped in millions. Millions here and 16 million there, and just millions to help him with the site. And our argument is that they shouldn't be chipping in with individual white developers. If the city is going to chip in like that, chip in with the people who have lived there and are subject to be driven out of there. and chip in with them and let them get a piece of the pie of the development. And like the Honorable Marcus Mosiah Garvey had us take out shares in the Black Star Line, shares in his shipping company. Why is it in 2018 we can't have shares in our own development company? And that development company build that new building, that new high-rise, that so-called affordable housing unit that is being built by that white man with that favor. Why can't that be the People's Development Company managed by a competent group of persons that oversee the construction? Why must it go out of our community? Why can't that be a part of the investment? And why can't I, if I put in $50 or $100 or $1,000, why can't I see my investment rise as the value and the equity in that property rise? Why can't my stake in it rise? And why can't I have a say in how it affects my community? And why can't I help shape policy so that it's fair and balanced and reasonable? And why can't we make some money? And that's why, brother, we're driving here on April 21st for a moratorium on all development. We want it all stopped until we can come to the table with the powers that be and renegotiate how development take place in this city. And that's how everybody should be doing in every city. In that regard, if we all move to shut them all down, and then we bring all these mayors to the table trembling to see how they are going to redistribute the wealth instead of being manipulated by developers who have dropped some money in their campaign coffers. They're doing the bidding of developers. But as we organize for the 10,000 Black Man March, we're going to force the powers that be to play to the tune of us. This is happening in this city right now. Trust me, the mayor has never seen anything like us and what we did in 2 days. But if I have it my way, I shut down 20 of them every week at the same time and bring it all to a halt.
We're joining conversation this evening with attorney, organizer, and founder of Black Lawyers for Justice, Malik Zulu Shabazz. Brother Malik, the last time you were with us, you were headed to Charlottesville to defend one of the young men that was beaten by racist mob down there. We see this week that one of the brothers, I don't think that you were defending DeAndre Harris, he went to court for felony assault after he was beaten within an inch of his life. I don't know how he made out. I know that the brother with the torch, I think his name was Corey Long, he's supposed to go to trial later on. And the brother that you represented, was it Donald Blackley? Blackie?
No, I represent Corey Long.
All right.
Yeah.
Tell us a little bit about
Virginia Attorney Jeroy Green represent Corey Long.
Okay.
His trial is set for April 17th, the day before the convention.
Oh, wow. Okay.
To try his case. DeAndre Harris was freed, and we're happy that he was freed.
Okay.
However, there may be some kind of conspiracy afoot to blame Corey Long. According to what we have heard from parts of that trial. So we're encouraged by him being found not guilty, but we have to look further into actually what the testimony was to make sure that there wasn't some plan afoot to throw Corey Long under the bus.
Okay.
At any rate, I'm planning on deposing the ex-police chief to show soon, the next few weeks, to show how the lack of security and the lack of operations by the police on that day contributed to the complete breakdown and safety for the demonstrators and everyone. And they were the root cause of why there was any conflict that day, was the deliberate indifference and the negligence of the police department. So the struggle continues. April 17th, we got to try that case. It's down now to disorderly conduct. And we believe that we're going to free Corey Long and win on that day. It's going to be a big day and a great day right before our convention. The struggle continues in Charlottesville up to this trial and after this trial. The struggle continues, and I'm in for the win in Charlottesville.
You know, and I know that you're aware of it, but for our listening audience, that's not the it was a white guy that fired a gun at Corey Long in front of the police. I think that they got him on charges of illegal discharge of a firearm when it should be attempted murder, because he could, Listen, if he didn't hit Corey Long, he could have hit anybody. This white guy fired a gun at Corey Long right in front of the police barricades and just kept walking down the street.
So, That's true. The videotape shows that in the midst of these white demonstrators filing out or going wherever they were going, and in the midst of the interaction between Corey Long and some others, that he did take out his firearm and fire it. And I agree that he has been charged with less of an offense than he should have. But, you know, that's what we're dealing with down there. You're dealing with a serious conflict between the white right, the rights of the white right, I want to say. We're dealing with a conflict between the rights of the white right, and the rights of the black opposition in this country. This trial and this case and those set of facts and circumstances are indicative of the broader set of facts and circumstances in America right now. The white right is in power. An outright bigot is in power. And then you have black people who are essentially trying to define who they are and where they're going in this hour, as well as beat back the opposition. And then you have a crippled white left and a crippled Democratic left that is crippled in this hour. This is one of the most interesting set of times that we've ever had in this hour. And so, you know, that's why Black Lawyers for Justice and I and Attorney Jeroy Green in Virginia are in it to free Corey Long, man. We're in it to free Corey Long and all the other cases I'm fighting, Oklahoma jail death cases. I take out for depositions next week. I deposed the former chief of police in Memphis, Tennessee here on Tuesday for the death of Darius Stewart in 2015 when Connor Schilling shot unarmed Darius Stewart back in 15. So what I'm saying to you is the fight is everywhere.
Yes.
I'm doing my part, but we need more and more helpers. So I just get to play my role. And everybody play their role right. And so, you know, that's what I'm working on. If I were to characterize myself, I don't see myself as no big leader like Donald Trump or Louis Farrakhan or another. I'm more like Paul Ryan or not in that sense.
Like that right
I ain't like him at all. But on another sense, I'm like the Speaker of the House. You know what I mean? I'm trying to organize the delegates or the people that's for liberation into some kind of reasonable formation so that we can fight. And I'm trying to use diplomacy and whatever I have to help align us for the fight and at the same time stay at the lead on the legal fight. That's pretty much where I'm at right now.
Okay. And you know, it's so important and powerful what you're saying and what you're doing. And if you don't mind, why I'm so energized by what you're doing and what is being done in DC. And I think our language should, make it personal, but also make it collective, right? So that everybody understand that we all have to be in this. And hopefully you'll agree with that, that it can't be done just by you alone or we'll burn you out, right?
Amen.
Everybody has to do their point part. And that gets to that point. Well, it's 2 points I see even in the flyer. I see that you had 100 co-sponsors in relationship to putting the National Black Men Convention. My question is, are most of those co-sponsors from DC proper, or are they, DC and national, co-sponsors for us to understand and learn what we have to do?
It's a mix, and these are groups that are affiliated with our guests, and they're just groups that we're making friends with. You know, in Washington, D.C., it could be something as grassroots as the Anacostia Citizens for Justice. They're right here. They could be Jahar Abraham's followers and his organization. He's one of our local organizers. The supporters of Councilman Trayon White and his office. Then we have the UNIA. We have a couple of Nation of Islam groups around the country. Dr. Cornel West and his followers, that's how I like to characterize it. They're with us. What it is that our co-sponsors are our partners.
Right.
These are
right.
People that we've established relationships with locally and nationally. And, you know, we're in this together. You know, that's the main point of that, is that we're in this together, and we want to come out of this together. You know, I want to show our people that we can organize the groups that are in the education, that we can assemble them in a reasonable formation. Those that are really want to fight for justice and in the courtrooms and the attorneys, that we believe that we can assemble them in a reasonable formation. The same as the economist. Now, we had a goal here. Well, let me say this. The same for the economist, the same for the reparations fighters. That those that are into reparations, we want to, in the reparations summit on Sunday, to see if we can arrange them in a reasonable formation. And that's what we're trying to do, is basically line up the players in this thing across the nation and locally so that we can take some steps forward together. You know, that's the main premise of why we are building even more than 100 groups that are ultimately going to come together. And then see what this thing is looking like. You know, we need a Congress. We need a black and an African Congress that represents our people and that is unbarred and unbossed. And then maybe this will help. So you got the Congressional Black Caucus, right? They supposed to be the most powerful political body that represents black people. And they are having a terrible time, as we see. I mean, I'm just saying they're having a rough time. Let me put it like that. We see them tomorrow as we lobby on Capitol Hill at 10 a.m. We're on Capitol Hill to lobby Congress to condemn Donald Trump and not to condemn Louis Farrakhan. Mm-hmm. We do that in the morning, and we're going to see the Congressional Black Caucus members, and we're going to see the GOP members that are putting these resolutions forward. We're going to see them all in the morning. But the bottom line is that, like, let's just say the Congressional Black Caucus is a brilliant head, but where's the body? You know, the okay. Let's just say our elites, our scholars, Dr. West or Dr. Tony Browder or Michael Eric Dyson, or these are great heads, but where's the body? Where's the connection to the body of leadership and the body of organizations that can support them and go to bat for them? So that they don't be frightened off when somebody comes to them and tells them to condemn Louis Farrakhan or something. So, you know, we have to have a movement right now. We should be on fire. I have to say that we're moving kind of slow.
Oh, yeah.
Because we're moving slow, because if you look at it, I mean, Donald Trump, I mean, he's worse than Lyndon Baines Johnson. He's worse than anybody we faced in the 60s. He's worse than Richard Nixon. He's worse than Bush. He's worse than Reagan. And so, you know, the white man has taken a step back. He's gone back into his Confederacy. He's gone all the way back to his roots. He's out here yeehawing right now. He's yeehawing with his agenda right now. And we should be much more fired up, not only against what we're against. We have to do that. But right now, we should be nation building, building our own schools, taking control of our community and handling this business and finance, educating our young boys and training our people up and building a united front like never before. We should see this thing called black nationalism and black power coming forth in a strong and aggressive and professional way like never before.
Just to add on what you're saying, because when you mention about the shutdown of the site and the importance of organizers, and that's where I see the tie-in of the workshops that you'll be having at the convention, because those workshops, as I'm looking at it, it'll also be able to be the catalyst, well, the development process for the organizers that have to stay afterwards. And for those of us who will come, so that we can get the skills to take back. Because as you said, we have to create the bodies on the ground. And the difference between now and during Reagan and Trump is that during Reagan, history will tell us, we had organizers on the ground. During Trump, we have none. And we have to build that up. And that's that body no body for those heads or those leaders that's in place, in my opinion. Mm-hmm. Will you agree with that?
I agree with that 100%. And, you know, I mean, and just recently, let's look at the recent example. Well, we thought we had Black Lives Matter, right? Because all we hear on the TV is Black Lives Matter, Black Lives Matter. Black Lives Matter was a half black body. It wasn't even an all black body. It was a half black body with a quarter black head. I hate to say it. It was only ran one quarter by blacks at the top and was totally integrated, but it represented, I guess, as they say, it really wasn't true. But what they say is the black agenda. And now you don't hear from it. Why we don't hear from Black Lives Matter on a national level when you got Donald Trump here? Ain't they supposed to be down here at the Trump Hotel in D.C. shutting it down? Ain't they supposed to be at the White House instead of the 10,000 black men march? Ain't they supposed to be at the White House? Ain't they supposed to be doing this, stopping highways, traffic? What happened to Black Lives Matter? It was a white head running a supposable black agenda. And when the Ford Foundation kicked that money in and whatever went down, here we go again. Without nothing, as they say, we really do have something. But you're going to see how the game works, brother. We have to take charge as black men and black people of our agenda, and we have to control these streets and all of this thing. It's all falling on our lap. If we don't build a street and a grassroots movement as people that can affect change on the ground, then we won't have one. George Soros is not going to give it to us.
There you go.
Brother, you know? The GOP, and I don't want to put it on no GOP because I think it's white politics, period, have come out and demanded that black elected officials publicly denounce Louis Farrakhan. Some of them have publicly denounced him. Some of them haven't responded as of yet favorably as some of the white constituents or their white brethren in government want them to. I see that the Nation of Islam, I think Ava Muhammad and another brother wrote a letter of condemnation to some of the people, Barbara Lee, Danny Davis, Meeks, I think, and one other that came out and publicly denounced, or Ellison, that came out and publicly denounced Minister Farrakhan. You see these Jewish and Anglos that are in power that want them to come out and publicly denounce Minister Farrakhan. See, I don't think, and I want your opinion on this, it's not about Minister Farrakhan. It could be about Malik Zulu Shabazz. It could be about Brother Richard. I think it's just that they want to see black reaction. They want to get a Pavlov's dog type of response out of black people. And if they can get a reaction out of them to do exactly what they want them to do. And some of the people have done this. But it needs to be a response from the community because these people are supposed to represent the community. And they're reacting to someone else. It needs to be some type of retribution that these people pay for what they've done. Talk about it from your opinion.
Yes, sir. That's why we're going to be at the Rayburn Building, 45 Independence Avenue in Southwest Washington, D.C. in the morning. We're going to meet in front of the Rayburn Congressional Office Building, a group of black leaders and others. And we're going to be there because we're going to the door of the Congressional Black Caucus leadership. We're going to the specific door of every black caucus member that has so far come out to denounce Minister Farrakhan. And before that, we're going to the door of the GOP intimidator and puppet master congressman who have put forth this resolution in a committee that they're trying to get brought to the for a vote. And the irony is that this president here, who 60% of the American public say is outright bigoted, this man here who have called black women bitches indirectly by calling black men sons of bitches, he has such a long track record of vile and bigoted statements, even the white man himself agrees he's racist, and his base, his political base say, yeah, he's racist, but so what if he's racist? How in the hell, and he's a government president, He controls all the finance. He has a lot of power here.
Mm-hmm.
How you going to condemn a private citizen who ain't even in the government? And you have yet to introduce a resolution to condemn Trump. I'm talking to the GOP. You have not distanced yourself from Donald Trump. You have not said officially that he does not speak for me, because really he does speak for you. That's why you haven't denounced him. We're going to jam them up tomorrow. We're going to jam up some Democrats, these spineless damn Democrat leaders who will not put a resolution on the floor to say that the United States Congress has condemned and censured Donald Trump, and he does not speak for us. The spineless Democratic Party and some of the spineless CBC who said they were going to put a resolution forth and have yet to put a resolution forth. Donald Trump should be condemned by Congress and condemned by the Senate. Long ago should have. And now you're going to say a man here, Minister Louis Farrakhan, who speaks for the oppressed, he speaks for the ex-slaves. Whatever he's saying about white people, white Jews or white Catholics or white people in general, we must realize that he's a representative of former slaves. And he's a representative of the pain, the suffering, the rape, the robbery, the genocide of a people. And whoever he speaks out against, he speaks out for the victim. He speaks out for those that have been hurt and who've been robbed. Nobody has robbed Donald Trump and his people of their name, language, religion, culture, and God. Nobody has robbed the GOP and their people of their name, their language, their religion, culture, and God. Nobody has robbed Donald Trump. And nobody has taken Donald Trump's followers, mothers and fathers, and drowned them in the lakes, the rivers, brooks, and streams, and strewn their bodies across the Atlantic Ocean. No black man can be a racist. I don't care what he says and what he's doing. All he could be doing is fighting back and saying something against 400 years of wicked deeds, and he's just saying something about it.
And that, man, you know, that's,
it burns my boy, it burns my blood, man.
And it gets to me so well. And then what you said, because we as black people, regardless who of the faction of us who will say it the way Minister Farrakhan is saying it, we have never, as you just said, we have never physically done any atrocity to white America. There's been no more support of the Constitution, the development of the American state, than black people in all shades. We have not. So if we feel, because of that 400 years of experience, and that's our narrative, you saying we can't even say it? That don't even make no sense.
That's how, my dear brother, you're so correct on that one point. I mean, the white man doesn't even want to express our anger or our outrage. He wants to control how we even think and talk about our oppression. Now, there's one point I distinguish from Minister Louis Farrakhan. On one point, he says that he speaks for the Nation of Islam, I think, that we have never harmed anybody, white or Jewish. Now, I respect and understand why he says that. But now my position is a little bit different. My position is something should be happening in your behind after all you have done. And I'm going to be embarrassed to say that nothing has happened to you after all you've done to me. I say that not enough has been done after all the white man has done to us, if you know what I mean. I mean, I'm embarrassed to say if somebody has raped and robbed me all the years and I haven't made some kind of move on them to shut them down, or by God's grace, even put them in the ground. But that's another subject, man. What I'm trying to tell you is that these people are lucky to have Louis Farrakhan tell them something like that. They're lucky to have a man tell them that I'm just going to tell the truth on you, but no harm will come to you, because there's a generation coming up that's going to know the truth and act on the truth, and that will get us all the way across the promised land and will deal with our enemies. And that is the generation that is we're talking to now as we move into the future. And I think that's why the enemy is afraid of a voice of a Louis Farrakhan, a voice that can reach the masses, because he knows that that truth will get outside of the divine constraints that he has laid out. and people will understand that, and this new generation will come and understand that we have been raped and robbed, and we must take back everything, as the preachers say, take back everything that the devil has taken from us.
We're in conversation with attorney, organizer, and founder of Black Lawyers for Justice, Brother Malik Zulu Shabazz. Let's go to the phones. 215. Oh, and you can get involved too by dialing 215-490-9832. That's 215-490-9832. Let's go to 215. 215.
How you doing? How you doing, brother Elliot?
How are you, sir?
Can you hear me, brother Elliot?
Yes.
Yeah. How you doing, my brother?
Hey, brother. Hey, my friend. How are you, sir?
I'm doing fine. Hey, brother Rick. Hey, brother Malik. Assalamu alaikum, my dear brother.
Wow. Alaikum salam, sir.
Brother Malik, it's always an honor and a pleasure to talk to you, brother. I was telling brother Elliot earlier today. I said I love this brother, man. I said brother Malik is a brother that loves our people, man. You bring it, brother. You don't half step it, brother. Sugarcoat it. You bring it. I want to say this first, brother Malik. You know, it just showed you that kindred spirits stick alike, because when you were saying about how y'all shut them sites down up in the D.C. area, see, that's just what Brother Elliot had been saying to me for months and months past about how we as black folks in this city need to go to these construction sites and shut them down. So just go to show you the Allah spirit is so bountiful, because y'all brothers on the same wavelength. But, before I talk about the devil in the White House, you know, Brother Malik, when you talk about, you know, like you say, how these Negroes, they get upset. See, if you notice, black folks get upset when you call the white man a devil. White folks don't get upset as much, because you know why? Because they know who they are. And see, I used to tell a brother here on the terrestrial radio station here in Philadelphia. He got upset when Dr. Khaled, Allah be pleased with the brother, he got upset with Dr. Khaled Muhammad, because he said that they crawl out the caves of Europe and all that kind of stuff, and they hook-nosed bagel eating. I said, Negro, you getting upset because Dr. Khaled saying something out of his mouth. I said, white folks do stuff, man. See, Negroes always kill me when they get upset because you call a white man a name. I said, these devils ain't just saying no names. I said, Mr. Farrakhan is saying things. Dr. Khaled saying things. These devils actually acting on things. They passing legislation to kill your black behind. They passing legislation where these cops can kill you, beat you up, and have no kind of accountability for you. You get upset because this brother saying some words out of his mouth. I mean, these Negroes kill me with that stuff, Brother Malik. They get upset because these brothers, you understand what I'm saying, brother? You understand what I'm saying? They get upset with some words, and these devils acting on stuff, man. But, you know, when you look at that these so-called Zionist Jews and their racism, see, it go come a point, Brother Malik, where black folks in this country, it's a showdown is here. And we never going to be a free black folks until we stand up to that racist element within that Jewish community. And, again, I'm not saying all the Jews that think that, because there's many Jews that don't look at Israel as the fulfillment of this so-called divine prophecy. But that wicked element within the Jewish community, we're going to have to deal with them, because we can't keep on having these Negroes capitulating to them at the incentives and of our people suffering. When you see black folks living in subpar neighborhoods, when you see black children going to subpar schools and black folks still being victims of police brutality, we can't keep having these Negroes like Gregory Mix and Barbara Lee and all the rest of them coons capitulating to white Jewish interests when our own people catching hell, and like you said, Brother Malik, they're supposed to be representing us. We got to deal with them Negroes at one point. But see, when you look at the history of Israel and how they've been allowed to get away with stuff, because as you know, as a student of his history, Brother Malik Shabazz, you see how Israel years ago blew up the King David Hotel, that terrorist Menachem and Begin and them blew up that hotel, killed innocent people. Israel was allowed to get away with that. 1967, Israel was allegedly supposed to be a friend of the United States. They blew up the USS Liberty and killed I don't know how many American sailors. And this white boy, who was one of the sailors that survived that, Brother Malik, he says, I don't give a damn what nobody say. He said, I'll say to my dying day, Israel fired on us. They knew who he was. They said you could see our flag waving from the air that was blown. We were screaming and howling, we Americans. And they fired on that ship anyway and killed American sailors. Then you go to Jonathan Pollard, this Jew that was an American, was working for the government of America, spying for Israel. He got a life sentence. He spent 30 years in jail before the Jews cried and begged and pleaded and threatened. So they finally let him out of jail. So you see, Israel has been allowed to get away with all kinds of stuff against America, and they're supposed to be a so-called friend of America. And we're not even going to talk about how they did to South Africa, how they how the state of Israel, that criminal outlaw nation Israel, how they supply weapons over the years to kill our brothers and sisters in South Africa during the racist apartheid government, supplied all kinds of weapons to murder our innocent men, women, and children. So we know their bloody history over there. They not know no real Jew. They fake Jews. They number garden variety Europeans. So we're going to have to stand up for them at some point. If we're going to ever throw off the yoke of their slavery and get these Negroes back in line, they capitulate to everything that they say and everything. And you're right, Brother Malik. I'm so glad y'all brothers will be in front of the White House with that devil, you know, protesting him. And I don't know if he's going to have time to peep out the window, because he's probably going to be in the room for porn star by the time y'all out there march. And he numbered the pervert to begin with. But it just goes to show you just what you got in the White House now, because this is what the Honorable Elijah Muhammad said in Follow America. This guy's bringing America down. He's a mockery. He's making a mockery of America because he's supposed to be the leader of the so-called free world. And this is what America can put up. The world looking at America saying, man, if this is the best y'all can put up. We know Reagan and Bush and all them other devils is bad, but you done hit the all-time low. You put this loser in the White House. So all Donald Trump is doing is further bringing America down to their knees now. As the Honorable Elijah Muhammad said years ago, this country going to fall to it. They're going to be a shame and a disgrace before the world. And Donald Trump is, he's the fulfillment of that prophecy of Brother Malik, you know?
Right. Man, you said it all, black man. It said so much truth. And I will approach my response to you by affirming your spirit to fight and just affirm that we have to stand up to all forms of oppression. And we must stand up to the enemy, who is constantly dictating and trying to boss us around and telling us what to do. I would say this, though. You know, I really, in my journey in this struggle, which has been over 30 years, and it began in the late 80s, and it went through much of the early 90s between the conflicts between blacks and Jews. And I was caught up into it at Howard University, and I came to national attention and national attack for exposing many of the truths that you have laid out here. But I would say this, in my reflections in 30 years, I'm personally not interested in doing an exact deja vu of 24 to 30 years ago. I think that we have to rise to a higher level and not get back into a posture with this enemy, where really it still leaves the enemy in power and us without much as we approach these current struggles that we're having with white supremacy, of which our struggle with white Zionism and whites who say they are Jews is a part of it. First of all, I want to say that I see our struggle as a struggle against white supremacy in general. White supremacy in general, whereas this white man is Donald Trump, another white man with a yarmulke on, a white man who says he's a Catholic, a white man who says he's a whoever he is. Brother, as the Most Honorable Elijah Muhammad teaches us, we have a problem with the white man and white supremacy in general. Yes, all sir. Of them are different. They are different formations and different armies in the white supremacy. We do have to fight them. But I want to say this, my brother, as we get older, our family, see, over there, the Netanyahus and whoever they are over there in Israel, and they babies right now in Beverly, Hollywood, California, or Beverly Hills, wherever they're at, brother, their families and their children are eating well.
Yes, sir.
In this hour. They are, as much as they are, maybe some of them might be irritated by something that Khalid Muhammad, Malik Zulu Shabazz, that you say or they say, they are not that irritated by it, brother, because they have gone on to rule and master the situation, and they are out there doing brisk business. White folks who have robbed us, white Catholics, white Christians, white regular Gentiles, white Jews, they have gone on with their situation. So what I want to say is, as we fight these battles, we go on Capitol Hill tomorrow to address this situation. We must also understand the twofold thing. We must follow the teachings of Elijah Muhammad and raise up the real children of Israel.
Yes, sir.
We must get into doing exactly what the messenger said and show ourselves to be a powerhouse of a people. Because on another hand, the Jews, the white Jews, really are laughing at us. Not at Farrakhan or us. They don't laugh at this. But as a people, they are laughing at us.
Yes, sir.
Because they feel that they have come from wherever they came from, and they pool their resources, and they are making them a heaven on earth. Even by stealing land from the Palestinians and others, they are carving out their heaven today, my dear brother, and making a credible lives for their children and their future children and others as they go about their work in the various communities of America. And they would like us to be limited to complaining about them, yet neglecting the heaven that is right before our doorstep. So I just advise this, as much as we press the attack against Abraham Foxman, the ADL, and all of them, all that's important to me. But it will not stop me from black nationalism and building a nation of my own.
Without a doubt.
Continuing to grind up this real estate here in the community. When we see the devil acting up, we have to do like the messenger did. Yes, he kept calling the white man the devil all the way till he left. But when he left you in 1974, he also rolled out the platform. He rolled out. He sat down and let his national secretary come out and show you the farmland the nation had.
Yes.
The apartments the nation had, the airplane the nation had, the fish all over the country. So we still must not let them take us off focus of building an economy, a movement, a nation of our own. That's the best demise for them. Our rise is what's going to produce their demise. We can holler at them and expose them all day, but they still got the wealth and the guns. But our rise now is really what they fear.
Well, you know, Brother Malik,
thank you for your call, Brother Joe.
Brother Malik, I'll close with this. You're absolutely right, because I'll stay focused, because Brother Ellie and them right here in Philadelphia, they have brought the black farmers in over the years. So while I'm fighting against their Zionism, their white racism, white supremacy, if you will, I never lose focus, Brother Malik, by the grace of Allah, on our goals, is to, like the honorable life to do for self. I'm about doing for self for our black children to have good schools to go to, for our black people, our elderly, to have good, safe neighborhoods to live in. Oh, I never lose sight of that, brother, because you're absolutely right. Because at the end of the day, them devils still doing what they got to do. So I'm going to condemn white racism, white Zionism, and all that kind of stuff. I'm going to stay on like a hot to a rock, but at the same time, I'm never going to lose sight of our economic goals, brother. That's for our people to have freedom.
I want to organize with you.
Yes, sir.
Brother, I want to organize with you. I wish you could. Attorney.shabazz@yahoo.com is my email.
Attorney.shabazz@yahoo.com.
Email me right away, brother.
Yeah. Thank you so much, brother.
I can give you my cell phone, because what I noticed is that you're a good researcher. You got a lot of facts, and part of building our nation is educating our people about what has happened to us. So I would like to work with you to put your energy into constructive use, so we can take that research you got and we can get it out through various channels, so we can educate our people about what has happened.
Yes, sir.
You got good energy. I'd love to work with you.
Well, I'm going to send some emails, Brother Shabazz. I definitely will email you, Brother Shabazz. You can count on that, my brother. And inshallah, I want you to keep doing what you're doing, because, like I said, brother, we need people like yourself out here, Brother Richard, Brother Elliot, that's out here working the vineyards for our people and stuff, man, because our people are under attack, man. Our very survival is at stake here, because we definitely got a madman in the White House who's like, the other one's been bad, but this guy takes it to an all new level. So we definitely got work to do, brother, and I'm going to continue to do my part by the grace of Allah. I'm not going to be hoodwinked. I'm not going to be hoodwinked, tricked. I'm going to stay on focus and do what I have to do to help our people's rise. Because like you said, Brother Malik, our rise leads to their demise.
Thank you for your call, brother.
Sir, peace. Salam.
Let's go to Newport News. Newport News.
Good evening, gentlemen. Good evening.
How are you, sir?
Brother Shabazz, I wish I could shake your hand and give you a hug. All I can tell you is much love. You talk about numbers. I'm a country guy. And I think what you're telling Jay is what I keep trying to tell people the last 30 years. We as a people don't want to learn. We don't have to keep hollering Jew, Jew, Jew. We can talk about the facts about those people, which only make up 2% of this country's population. But they can get a black president to give them $40 billion guaranteed for 10 years to buy arms from this country so they can wreak havoc all over the Middle East. We can talk about corruption from Netanyahu that you were talking about. We can talk about them euthanizing and giving birth control pills to the black refugees that they took in so they could get a big grant from the WGO. It's all about money with that segment of the population. So I applaud you for what you're doing, and I got your email, and I'm going to try to send a little stuff to you too, because we tend to think like children and do name calling rather than hit people with the facts over and over.
Well,
why do you have why do you have the Palestinians corralled in a place and bombarding them and killing them with all kinds of feces, depleted uranium, white phosphorus, got them in a concentration camp, and you're running around talking about, look what they did to us in the Holocaust. There's a lot of facts we can talk about without the name calling. But I applaud your work and much love, young brother.
Thank you so much. I appreciate it. You know, one thing I learned from being involved in a conflict with the Zionists for 24 years, one thing I did learn is that the Anti-Defamation League and the Southern Poverty Law Center, they're looking for a boogeyman to raise some money. So one of their tactics is to try to draw out anything we say and magnify it, because it helps them fundraise and it helps them to stay relevant by saying who the boogeyman is.
Oh, you
now, some of that, you know, and some of that comes with the territory. I mean, some of that comes with the territory, and it is what it is. I mean, to a certain extent, we are their boogeyman at different times. However, they do use us. Everywhere I go in some cities and I'm doing any kind of action, and many times they'll send a press release out to the city that I'm in to try to mar my reputation by saying something outrageous or taking something out of context, and many times outright lying or branding me with a label as an anti-Semite. And so I'm just trying to tell you that in this whole thing about blacks and Jews, sometimes they are alarmed, genuinely, and sometimes they are only using us for their own purposes. But the moral to the whole story is we must understand that they and their children are living well, and they are conducting actions to live better. And they are not truly threatened by us unless we threaten their livelihood or their land or their financial status. And so, you know, if you really want to get out, let me cut to this, because I'm an action man. I mean, if you really want to get out, then I don't believe in necessarily a lot of name calling either unless we're going to get out of the business. Show me where we're going to hit the streets and put that Zionist business boycott in on the street. Show me how we're going to enforce it worldwide. Show me how we're going to hit them in the pocket. Because other than that, some accusations about what a so-called Jew did here or there, I mean, it is relevant to our knowledge of our history, but it starts to get redundant to me unless we're going to do something about it. You know, I'm into doing something about it. I'm into them saying, man, we lost $600 million in black profits due to the anti-Zionist worldwide boycott. You know, other than that, man, they rolling on, man. They in Beverly Hills and everywhere else making big money, and they rolling on. They are not truly threatened by us yet until we rise.
Okay. You know, we're going to take a brief break. When we come back, Brother Malik, you still got a little time?
Yeah, I got that. Not too much longer. I got some legal work to do, but I'll hang in 15 more minutes.
Good, good. We want to you put on the author's hat. We want to just get you to talk a little bit about the Book of Khaled when we come back.
Sure,
and
it's a few more
calls online. So, callers, you can still get involved in the conversation by dialing 215-490-9832. That's 215-490-9832. We're in conversation with attorney, organizer, and founder of Black Lawyers for Justice, Brother Malik Zulu Shabazz. We'll be right back.
Listening to Time for an Awakening Media, part of the Black Talk Radio Network. For podcasts or live programming, hit them up at timeforanawakening.com.
All Insurance Incorporated, an African-American owned and operated insurance agency in business for over 20 years, located at 231 Southeastern Road in Glenside, PA, with other offices in Germantown and West Philadelphia. Call now for commercial insurance quotes, homeowners insurance quotes, automobile insurance quotes, notary and tax services, representing over 15 major A-rated insurance companies, offering a discount on all notary services if when you call in for a free quote. Call this number, 215-885-2444. That number is 215-885-2444. 215-885-2444. All Insurance Incorporated.
Before your roof becomes unruly, call Dooley. Dooley Brothers, specializing in shingle, rubber roofs, gutters, downspouts, and vinyl sidings. Call for your free estimate today. 215-224-3882. That's 215-224-3882. Dooley Brothers Roofing, the roofing experts you can trust. That number again, 215-224-3882. 215-224-3882. Before your roof becomes unruly, call Dooley.
RG Electrical Inspections provides electrical inspections for realtors, licensed electricians, and homeowners. Licensed and insured underwriter, serving Philadelphia and surrounding area. Call today, 484-268-9837.
I think you'll find, sir, that there will come a time when black people wake up and become intellectually independent enough to think for themselves as other humans are intellectually independent enough to think for themselves, then the black man will think like a black man, and he will feel for other black people. And this new thinking and feeling will cause black people to stick together. And then at that point, you'll have a situation where when you attack one black man, you are attacking all black men. And this type of black thinking will cause all black people to stick together. And this type of thinking also will bring an end to the brutality inflicted upon black people by white people. And it is the only thing that will bring an end to it. No federal court, state court, or city court will bring an end to it. It's something that the black man has to bring an end to himself.
You preachers and leaders, you administrators, you teachers, you leaders, you are the worst. No cowardly, punctified leader will lead this new generation of young black men and women. Your day of leading them is finished. You can't feel it? When you talk to young people, you can't feel that you're missing them? Parents, you can't feel when you're talking to your children that this is a new generation and they don't want to hear your compromising talk? Did you hear them in Ferguson tell Jesse, get the hell out of here? You ain't no leader. I was hurting for my brother because Jesse worked hard for our people. But time has moved on. And what was good yesterday ain't no good at all today. So either you become a new vessel so that new wine can be poured into the old wineskin. Or your day of leading our people is over, and it will never come back to you again. Damn it, we're still in the land of our bondage. We're still in the land of captivity. We're still a slave to the Democratic Party. Still a slave to the Republican Party. You can't even see a Freedom Party. You don't see it. You're a slave. I'm a slave. And unless we admit that we are slaves, then we can never get free. Never get free.
Who put the present Democratic administration in Washington, D.C. The whites were evenly divided. It was the fact that you threw 80% of your votes behind the Democrats that put the Democrats in the White House. When you see this, you can see that the Negro vote is the key factor. And despite the fact that you are in a position to be the determining factor, what do you get out of it? The Democrats have been in Washington, D.C. only because of the Negro vote. They've been down there 4 years, and all other legislation they wanted to bring up, they brought it up and gotten it out of the way, and now they bring up you. And now they bring up you. You put them first, and they put you last, because you're a chump. A political chump.
So you could see that the government of America has been planning our demise. Any members of Congress here, any members of the civil rights movement that are here, you love this nation. You've suffered every indignity to make America better, that she might be great. And every time you forced her to make a law that was in our favor, they came right behind that law with skill and chicanery to make the law of non-effect. When it came to treating the citizens of African descent fairly, America failed. She put them in chains. The government put them on slave quarters, put them on auction blocks, put them in cotton fields, put them in inferior schools, put them in substandard housing, put them in scientific experiments, put them in the lowest paying jobs, put them outside the equal protection of the law, kept them out of their racist bastions of higher education, and locked them into positions of hopelessness and helplessness. The government gives them the drugs, builds bigger prisons, passes a three-strike law, and then wants us to sing God Bless America? No, no, no. Not God Bless America. God damn America. That's in the Bible for killing innocent people. God damn America.
for treating her citizens as less than human. Goddamn America, as long as she tries to act like she is God and she is supreme.
From antiquity to the present, our people need to develop a new paradigm. It's time for an awakening with your host, Brother Elliot. Sundays, 7 p.m., Fridays at 8 p.m. For podcasting or live program scheduling, hit us up at timeforanawakening@gmail.com. Welcome back to Time for an Awakening, and we're joined in conversation this evening with attorney, organizer, and founder for Black Lawyers for Justice, Brother Malik Zulu Shabazz. He's been with us this evening to talk about the Black Men's National Convention and 10,000 Black Men's March happening in Washington, D.C., April 18th to the 22nd. You can get involved. You can log on to the website. I'll get Brother Malik to give out all that information before he leaves us this evening. I want to get a couple more callers on before we lose our guests. Let's go to 646. Let's go to 646.
Yes, good evening, Brother Richie, Brother Elliot, and Brother Malik.
How are you, sir?
Listen, Brother Malik, let me ask you this. Where are y'all going to be centrally located at? And what is the overall goal of your movement at this time? And what is basically the template that you're using as an example on how your group would like to move forward? Because, you know, I'm kind of sick, really honestly and truthfully, of the minister and, you know, the whole attack on these Jews. Because, unfortunately, what has happened this time is now your sister, Tamika Mallory, has been put out there. You know, now I'm going to be honest, I have issues with her, but I just basically feel that there's no real protection for this sister. And I saw what happened when I came up in the movement with Sister Soldier. You know what I'm saying? Now, Tamika Mallory is not on Sister Soldier's level. But the point of the matter is that she is involved in a so-called movement that will be there to help our people on a certain level. You know what I mean? Even though I disagree with it on a lot of fronts, you know? And at this present time, where we're at now, development as a people, I don't understand, honestly, why the minister has to keep on talking about the Jew. The Jew don't give a damn about him. All they do is use him to attack other black people, you know, when it's necessary for them to do whatever they're going to do. But on the real scope of things, you know what I'm saying? They don't care nothing about him because he's no threat. If we're going to be honest in regards to the minister, what he needs to do is deal with the fratricide where he's at in Chicago. I mean, honestly, what is he doing in Chicago that's developing African people? And man, let's even talk about his own group. Do they own any banks? Do they own any supermarkets? Do they own anything in honesty that is really contributing to our upliftment as a people?
Let him answer that, Jay. Brother Malik?
Stepping off some hot stuff, but I'm going to step right on with you. As a man of experience, and I have to be honest with you, I've already stated that I've been in this struggle and surrounding the struggle between blacks and Jews for 24 years. I'm on the record books. I'm high ranked. They say that I'm the second highest ranked man on Abraham Foxman's list and websites and the Southern Poverty Law Center. But I don't let them drive me into what I'm saying and what I'm doing. And, you know, as again, I'm against white supremacy in general. Every one of them is faking every religion that they're involved in, as far as I'm concerned. They're faking the Catholicism, faking the Judaism. They're faking it all. I'm talking about white people because of their conduct and how they have and continue to mistreat us. What we're falling short as the real chosen people is to understand that while we, if we are out there still now in 2018 saying the Jew did this, the Jew did that, well, he might probably did or did do it. But that ain't the reality is when the white people drive in our community and they look at what's happening in our community, they laugh at us.
Yes.
They mock it. They mock us when they see that in our community we still have killing, dereliction, dysfunction everywhere inside of the ghettos and in the black community, and we are sub-performers in every category. Every category we sub-performing. And so the white people really don't respect us. And on a certain level, my dear sister, as hate much as I hate to admit it, sometimes they are right. We have not earned their respect. And so, you know, I mean, on one hand, you know, I am firmly against all exposing everything against the enemy. But on another hand, I understand that my job and our job is to stand up the real chosen people in our community. And that is harder. It's easier to blame somebody else than it is to really get down and to put that real estate in place. It's easier to point the finger elsewhere than to do this non-glamorous, non-headline making work inside the black community. That's what the National Black Men Convention is about. Now, if you want to know, you ask what we're about, go to blackmensmovement.org. Go to blackmensmovement.org. You can figure it out. My sister, we're about black nationalism.
I'm a brother. I'm a brother. I'm sorry.
Sorry, God. Sorry, black man, black guy. Please accept my apologies. My dear brother, we have to build a nation of our own, black man. We have to show that we can take charge of our community. The white people have taken charge of their community. The Jews have taken charge of their community. And they laugh at the fact that we have not taken charge of our community. So, you know, that's just where I'm at in my career on the thing, too. I understand what you're saying. I mean, at the end of the day, we can holler white man, white Jew all day. But at the end of the day, they are still going to be in power. And we're still going to be poor, hungry, ragged, naked, and out of doors. You know, and in the wake of it, you just have a bunch of newspaper headlines. And that's not what I'm after. I'm after the program of the Honorable Marcus Mosiah Garvey and the program of the Honorable Elijah Muhammad. You know, and I believe that I'm an example of that by what I'm doing personally in the black community, but I want to see many of us get on board before it's too late.
Well, let me just leave you with this, brother. If you are going to do those things, just like you shut down that site that was building those buildings, I hope that you was able to get brothers into that site when they reopen of a high number. I hope that you will be able to collectively bring our brothers together to build businesses, to be able to do that work, to be able to invest in things that are practical to our development in regards to community. We need supermarkets. We need all sorts of things that will allow us to sustain ourselves when the white man finally get ready to say the hell with your black behind, because we have more use for you. If you could do that, brother, then you've done your job. Because as far as I'm concerned, 60 or 70 years of having an organization, and you can't take care of your people that is part of your organization, man, let's take care of other people, then, man, be honest. You're not really doing nothing. You have no legacy. You just have nothing but rhetoric, and in the process, all it does is put our brothers and sisters in danger. But you can't feed us, you can't clothe us, you can't do nothing but just talk. Okay, and have a good day.
Can I interject? Because I think that the point is well taken, and I know we're short on time, but I think we need to continue to emphasize that, if, and correct me if I'm wrong, the reason why the National Black Men Convention is going on, besides, you know, when I keep looking at the networks, that the workshops that you're having, and the thrust that you're saying that it's about,
is that we all have to be engaged in this project.
Exactly.
And everybody has a role. And if we look at it anything different, then we're making ourselves weaker as a people. You know, not one element over here compared to one element over there supposed to do it all, or one person like Dr. or Brother Malik Shabazz cannot do it all. We, each one of us, have to contribute. And one of the ways, if I understand you right, Brother Shabazz, is that by coming to the convention in April. Mm-hmm. So that way we can be able to network with each other, so we can be able to learn from each other and go back to our local areas and solve the problem of developing more organizers on the ground so the body can become stronger.
Yeah, well, we just, my dear brother, and I, as I depart, our efforts at the National Black Men Convention and the 10,000 Black Men March are the primary focus is Kuchi Chagulia, self-determination, uniting with ourselves and doing for self. Again, that's Wednesday, April 18th. That's the Education and Health Summit. It's at Shiloh Baptist Church in D.C. all day into the evening. And again, Professor James Smalls from South Africa, Baba Buntu. You don't know him, but he's one of the greats from South Africa. Professor Griff. And Dr. Tony Browder, mm-hmm. the great Egyptologist and scientist from Kemet, are our keynote presenters, but there's workshops all day with psychiatrists, there's psychologists, there are attorneys doing legal training. We're giving the black man the tools at this convention for survival. The second day, again, is about economics. We're working on a national black economic plan with Dr. Claude Anderson, Dr. Boyce Watkins, and others that we should be able to unveil at the convention. It's all about economics, finances, and teaching you how to take advantage of that dollar, that real estate, and that business. Again, doing for self. That Friday is about justice and politics, and it is about organizing for our defense. We do have to defend. We do have to protest. We do have to engage the system. Dr. Cornel West, myself, Attorney Malik Zulu Shabazz, Hashim Nzinga of the New Black Panther Party, Ilyasha Shabazz, Malcolm X's daughter, and other people on the political front and the justice front will be the Justice and Politics Summit at Shiloh Baptist Church, April 20th. Again, the Saturday, Save Our Sons, Stop the Killing, the big rally in the black community that focuses on the stopping of the killing, stopping of the gentrification, and uniting in our community to stop the death so we can stop white people from taking over our communities. Then we march to the White House to announce our program for self-determination and reparations in front of Donald Trump. And we get our shoes brown by talking about him bad, because he's talked bad about us, and he ain't seen no black people with mouths like us till we put our foot in his behind Saturday evening, April 21st, at the White House. Then we come back for Repairing Ourselves and great scholars from across the world on Sunday, April 22nd at Shiloh Baptist Church. Dr. Leonard Jeffries, many from the Moors and the Nation of Islam, and also the Honorable Silas Muhammad, who hasn't been heard from for a while, the leader of the Lost Found Nation of Islam, will give us a keynote. And then we have delegates and representatives from all over the nation. And at the end, we're going to take a vote, an official vote that will be registered for the United Nations, a plebiscite by Dr. Mustafa Al-Ansari of the Human Rights, American Human Rights Commission, and others. So we're still working through it. We have about a month left. We're still working for our coalition, working for our program, working for things that you can come, get you a job, get your mind right. And so I do agree. Right now, we're doing that grunt work of doing for self, and we have something on the agenda where we do take on the enemy, old no good Trump. And that's what we're about. And we're about this work of black nationalism, and we're about this work of black power. And thank y'all for listening. I got to get on to some other work, but I love y'all, and I appreciate you having me on.
Brother,
our website is blackmensmovement.org, blackmenmovement.org, and on Facebook, it's National Black Men Convention, the event page, National Black Men Convention.
Brother Malik, I want to thank you as always, man, for your work, and we'll be in touch with you.
And love y'all. Love y'all. We partners. We want to be partners for life. Appreciate you and Black Power.
Talk to you soon. Brother Richard,
yes,
we got a couple calls on here. We'll clear up the board, and then we can start winding things down, because I know you're a little short there. Yeah, because you've been around it, dealing with the conference here all weekend, so we're gonna wind things down. But you know, let me say something before I go to the phones and take a well. We look like a call dropped off. They can give us a call back at 215-490-9832. 215-490-9832 before we leave. You know, listen, I love Brother Jay. I love his contributions. But the one thing I want to say is this. We can't keep – see, because, Richard, listen, I can't come on a venue or whatever and say, Richard, you've been around for 30 years. You ain't doing nothing. I don't see nothing. This brother over here, Brother Malik Jews, you've been involved in this organization for 30 years. I don't see nothing. You ain't doing nothing. And some of these men don't. They'll just listen. But the thing is, somebody might say, well, Brother Elliot, what are you doing? What are you doing? And see, that's what this program is for. If anybody is critical of any work that some of these people are supposed to be doing, and some of the righteous work that brothers are doing, then the forum that he put together, because if you see some of the literature, Richard, you've seen it. You see some of the people that's going to be there. It's a cross section of people from all over this country and from different fields. So it's an opportunity for anybody that wants to get involved in some type of reclamation project, because a lot of these things here are definitely reclamation projects. You've seen it, Richard.
Yeah.
Some of these workshops are a definite reclamation project. It's something for us to get involved in. I don't have to be a Lone Ranger anymore. I can join with other people and get involved in some substantial work. It's an opportunity for us to do this. So we don't necessarily have to be critical of everybody. And when it's an opportunity to put something forth, I don't have anything. And I'm not accusing the brother of not having anything or not having a program. I'm just saying this for everybody to just take it or leave it. If they can use it, use it. If they don't need it, then they don't need it. But that's what this program is for. We have brothers and sisters from all over this country on this program to talk about things that they're doing to reach out to our people nationally, to reach out to their people locally, to help our people start to move towards that new paradigm that we talk about on Time for Awakening. It's an opportunity. Certainly, it's always an opportunity to vent. But sometimes it's not all about venting all the time. And especially when we see what this man is doing constantly to our people, we have to develop strategies to move our people forward. And developing a strategy is not me out there by myself. That's not a strategy. Strategy is sitting in a war room with other people and developing ways to protect our people and to fight back. I mean, what you did this weekend, Brother Richard, is a perfect example of that.
That's it. That's how I see it. You know, it's constantly, you know, we're kind of always networking. And, you know, what's so interesting, and this is, you know, it gets to, because even in the conference, the ASCAT conference, right, brother stood up and said, well, I see, and it was 200 people there, you know, from around the country. Scholars, academics that have been sitting ahead of the department and been doing this work. And he said, well, what I see is a lot of older people, and you need younger people here. And it's a touchy thing, because I went to another conference where it was a little or less people and they were younger. But the thing that I see in one of the workshops that came up, how do we get these younger people develop? Now, how many from Philadelphia
could we send to men we could send just based off of our networks? How many from New York, Virginia, Maryland, could we send to that network just to get the information to continue to develop the network, to continue to develop the branches, to bring back so that they can be able to do this, duplicate the same thing that was done in D.C. in relationship to the development of these developers? That's what we have. That's what we have to be always looking at doing, not necessarily saying, well, did you do it all? And I'm not even going to go there. But my point is the question of how do we network? Because we haven't answered the question. How do we get young, middle-aged men or women and, you know, to come out to be that body that Brother Shabazz was talking about? Because if we don't get that, then we're looking for a Messiah. And that ain't even real.
And Richard, that's the challenge, man. Because I wasn't at the ASCAC conference, but I mean, we've talked about this on several occasions. That when you go to some of these events, you see an older crowd there, and some of the younger people are not necessarily there. And that's not all events, but to me, it's too many events that's like that. It's got to be a way.
And let me give you another example.
Go ahead.
And I apologize.
No, go ahead.
That was last Saturday. Because in this tour, I'm trying to bring people. So I went to the Association for the Study of History, Life, and Carter Woodson's organization.
Okay.
When I went up there, again, their monthly meeting, it was like 10 women that came, right? 70, retired. It was one woman who could barely walk up the steps. No men, no young people. Now, how is it that an organization that we celebrate for a whole 28 days, and I'm just talking about local, I'm just looking at Philadelphia, I don't know, everybody has to speak to their own city, and if the same thing exists, we have to raise that critical question. Why is it that this organization, that when we say how important, and this show emphasize how important is history to us in our identity building, in our character building, and providing our view in relationship to our strategy and what to do based off of what was done, that there is nobody in there but these old women, and one could barely walk up the steps, but they've been dedicated to get there, to have that meeting, to keep that organization going. That's a question. That's a challenge we have to solve. Yeah. Are we going to say that they shouldn't be coming, or they're not contributing? That we look at what they're doing and that's not enough. That's our problem. That's our challenge. That's not just their challenge, and we all have to be involved in that solution.
Yeah, you're exactly right. I mean, because, listen, somebody not involved in those organizations might be the key to the answer, Richard. Mm-hmm. A person that's not involved in an organization, that's not involved in any organization, period, might be the key to that answer. That's why, you know, when Jay asked the question about why is Farrakhan always talking about the same rhetoric? Now, it might be the same rhetoric to Brother Jay, and it might be the same rhetoric to Brother Malik, but it's not the same rhetoric necessarily to those Europeans that keep their ears to whatever black people are saying, because they know that at any time, some of that what we consider rhetoric might be the linchpin to put a black person into action. That might be the trigger. Listen, how many people, Richard, how many people that wasn't conscious of a damn thing, I'm talking about black people, have either written about or stated, you know, I read so-and-so and it gave me the consciousness to start doing the work I'm doing. And you know what a lot of them say? You know the book, the autobiography of Malcolm X.
Mm-hmm.
They'll mention that. I've heard people mention that. That wasn't conscious at all at one time, but it changed my life by reading the autobiography of Malcolm X. So we don't know what is going to be the trigger that jumps somebody into action. We don't know. So if anybody is doing any good work out there, it needs to be applauded. And if I can find some way to help them, then I need to do that. Listen, we could easily be using this time for awakening to talk about bull crap on the air. Because believe me, it's the airways is full of it. Turn on your morning shows. All you hear is stupid crap out of Steve Harvey and laughing and joking out of Tom Joyner and others that can't wait to take those seats that they're doing. We could fill up the airways with that crap. But I think that we need to develop some type of means to not only showcase what brothers and sisters are doing in every aspect of life, but to be a part of it somehow, even if it's just to give them a forum to spread the message, because somebody is going to hear it and then somebody is going to act on it.
Yes, sir.
I'll grab one or two more before we get out of here, Richard. That's all right.
Yes. Okay,
let's go to New York City. Brother, you on the air?
Yes. Can you hear me?
Yes, sir.
Yes, good afternoon, Elliot, and your host and everyone in the Time for the Awakening family. I just wanted to speak to what the brother was mentioning about the meeting where, you know, it was just an old woman going into the meeting, no men, etc., which is an issue. I'm not really that surprised or shocked, really, that there wasn't young people, per se, in that meeting. And when I say that, I'm really thinking about something I came across in Chancellor Williams' book, The Structure of Black Civilization. I'm sure it's in other books as well. But essentially, I mean, the older people, the senior energy is one type of energy, and the young energy is another type of energy. Now, they both can be working towards the same end, but if I take, for example, again, what I read in The Destruction of Black Civilization, you had a conference of the youth. And then you had a conference for the adolescents. Then you had a conference for the seniors and then the elders. And they were all working for the same thing, but then they would have a designated spokesperson who would, at, you know, a specific time, would go to a conference and voice the ideas of the young people to the older people or the next generation. The next generation would take it on and voice it until it went to the senior council. So it wasn't everyone in one room, because I don't think that would work. From what I said, the young people, the energy is different.
And
I remember growing up, for instance, you know, I'm in a room with my father and his friends, and I couldn't say anything. You know, if I said something, I'd be lucky enough to get a backhand. Who told you to open your mouth? Kind of, you know. So I think that's basically part of the issue, is that, you know, we have to have certain sort of designations of who's who and how we meet and how that meeting is structured. It's not just everyone in the room. And, you know, I mean, there are young people that have things to say. But, you know, I've kind of heard young and old that, you know, people sort of representing a cause, and when you sort of listen to what they're saying, the matter is, you know, it's so trivial and hasn't been really thought out, or there's no gravity to it. And yet the people that we're in, opposition against, as you all say, Brother Elliot, think tanks, these people are thinking deeply, constantly. They throw money at the smallest thing. Mm-hmm. And I can say that because I generally, you know, when I've worked in big banks, and I've been, you know, the only black person there, and I, you know, worked in theatre and other industries where I'm literally the only one or two black people there. So I generally know how, you know, white people go about doing things, and they are very, very, very thorough. They're extremely thorough. You know, you just have no idea. The majority of us have no idea You know, you can't just, you know, it's kind of, you know, it's kind of like I'm looking at the Japanese who are doing that jump skip rope that we used to do, and now they're taking over our art and beating us at it. Do you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, I'm just saying, you know, basically, you know, it's got to, it's not, it shouldn't be, it's not a shock. It's just that the way that it's structured has to be thought out. There has to be a meeting of the youth, a meeting of the adolescents, a meeting of the seniors, and a meeting of the elders. And I think that's one, all meeting on the same topic, same subject, but sort of bring in their energy in the way that they see the solutions to the table, and then it sort of comes together at a central point. Thanks for taking my call. I'll listen offline to you gentlemen speak. Thanks again, and have a good night.
Brother Lee, thank you for your call, man.
You know, I agree.
Yeah, he raised a good point, Richard.
I agree. And I think that's the vision, if not this, and I always use this term, strategic intent, of how our organizational structure should be formulated. It's just getting to that point, that we're talking about, you know, because we should be, whether, you know, as Chancellor and others have said, whether it be age set groups, that's a part of our social structure that we all know that we're going towards the same end. And that's why people are trying to institute rites of passage, right? So that they would be age set structures of socialization and collaborate. And then we'll come together out of our representatives to a council meeting, or even to like the convention, right? The Black Men Convention. If the Black men were around across the country were already in social organizations set up at age groups, or, you know, then they would send from their selective place somebody that'll go to that convention to network, get information, bring it back, and may duplicate it where they are, because we're all working towards the same end. And as Brother Shabazz says, in nation building. So therefore I agree wholeheartedly. It's just the caveat is that's the work we're trying to create. And though everybody who is doing something, to the point that you're always making, everybody who we bring through this network who are doing something is giving us either confirmation of what we're already doing, or giving us suggestions of what we can do, and giving us opportunities to be able to link up to make what each one is doing better than the individual part by itself.
Richard, tell me something before we start winding things down. During the conference, did they talk about, and I know they probably did, but which way did they approach leadership structure among our people that is culturally based? Did they talk about leadership from that standpoint? Because I know they didn't talk about it from no Democrat or Republican standpoint. But how did they approach the conversation of leadership?
It wasn't anything specifically towards leadership. And one of the and I'm trying to look through to this one of, because the workshops that I like, I attended the workshop on Tony Martin's books, and they're doing somebody's pulling together Tony Martin, who did the book on Marcus Garvey on Race First and Pan-Africanism, and they're pulling together Tony Martin's work. And so, and Tony Martin looking at the UNIA, the Universal Negro Improvement Association, if we're going to talk about using leadership as an example there of how they put together a educational or training thing for leaders, right? So it was in that sense, not necessarily from a political, you know, how do we as a, I didn't hear any discussion about, you know, if we were a, how do we go about politically organizing ourselves towards the electoral politics, or even within ourselves, because ASCAT has its organizational structure, right, of officers and whatever, and they had their elections there. So I say that to say to your question, I didn't hear specifically,
But when I looked at the discussion that went around using that workshops, particularly around Tony Martin, they were talking about the Universal Negro Improvement Association. Another workshop that I attended dealt with the importance of rites of passage or the educational institution. And another in that same workshop was dealing with the Kandasis, you know, of Nubia, and how they fought off those, that women military, that organization fought off the Romans, and how they did it. A question came up about the strategic. How did they recognize the strategy? What strategy did they use? But they didn't get into the organizational development as far as leadership. So I say all that to answer your question and say not specifically. That wasn't the kind of venue, or I didn't attend the workshops that kind of dealt with that specifically.
You know, and the reason I'm saying that, because, you know, the more we see things happening, the more we understand what we must do. And it's going to happen eventually. It's happening now. You know, the revelation that Malcolm talked about in that clip I played, where he said the mindset is developing, where black folks are going to look at when one black person is attacked, we all are attacked. You remember the portion I played?
Right, Richard?
And if you look at it, and here's an example. A so-called democratically, and I'm using this term that they use here, a democratically elected government took over in South Africa. And the leader said that he's going to take back land that was illegally taken or confiscated from the black folks that owned the land. That's righteousness. You know, this white man claimed that he believes in the Bible and he, you know, God bless America, put the hand on the Bible and all this other fallacy or perpetrating fraud. That's righteousness. If you take something from somebody, it's supposed to be given back to him. In fact, sometimes if you look in the Bible, you're supposed to give them double what was taken, especially if it was taken under false pretenses or illegally. So if you have a so-called democratically elected government come back and say all the land that was taken from a people, we're going to take it back without any compensation, that's righteousness. But now, the Europeans there in South Africa made overtures towards this country. Trump in particular, they mentioned Trump, about coming here. You remember that, Richard?
Right.
Now, you've seen what happened over the past maybe week and a half, that Australia said that they're going to help the people that have their land taken. Did you see it?
No, I didn't see that.
I know they were asking about
coming here.
It was a debate, or not necessarily a debate, conversation in Australia among their government about opening up, you know, for the people to come there. Now, all of a sudden, and I put the article on Time for Awakening page, that the United States, the EU, European Union, and Israel said that if South Africa goes through with what they're talking about, then it's going to be heavy sanctions against South Africa for doing that. Mm-hmm. Did you see that?
And that's a part of their tool bag. They always do that.
Yeah, but I'm just saying, it's good, you know, because we see sanctions against Zimbabwe, we see sanctions against Cuba that have basically crippled those countries' economies, even though they're still here. So now you got this country saying that they're going to do that to a quote-unquote democratically elected government. A person has a right to self-determination, whatever it is. Now, what is the black elected officials' response to that?
No.
They don't look at themselves as being part. They don't look at themselves as a diaspora or being part of an African Union, black people.
Mm-hmm.
They look at the people as something separate. You hear too much of that. These Europeans ain't looking at themselves as separate. That those Europeans down there crying, talking about, oh, you got to help us if they take our land. You see Europeans from all over this globe, Australia, United States, European Union, Israel, said, we're going to help you, brothers. We're going to help you. But anytime the conversation come up among black folks, and you talk about blacks from the islands, blacks from Africa, blacks from South America, oh, you know what, them blacks, them Jamaicans, they do this, that, and the other. The folks from the islands, they act like this. The folks from Africa, they act like that. All the symptoms of either colonization or just straight-out domination, and they're acting it out. We can't hold people responsible for that foolishness. We do it here to one another.
There you go. There you go.
Those people ain't holding. Those are separate nations, Richard, that I gave the example of. They're separate nations. Australia, United States, the European Union, and Israel are all separate nations with all different policies. But when it comes to rallying around other white people, they're doing it or trying to do it. We got to stop playing this so stupid game that this man has set up. Just like Brother Malik said on here, they laughing at us when they hear black folks talking foolish like that. Oh, man, I don't like no Jamaicans. They do this, that, and the other. Them Africans, they come here, they this, that. White folks is laughing. They're laughing because they created that situation. And every time they hear one of us talking like that, they know it still works. What we need to do is to start developing strategies that will bust that mindset, because it was a definite mindset that was put on us by Europeans.
There you go.
Don't feed into it. Bust that mindset. Start developing strategies to bust that mindset. Because if I feel that way, then I'm going to start teaching my children to feel that way. Or they're going to see me or hear me talking like that, and they're going to develop that same mindset. And it'll spread to another generation.
That's it.
We got to do what we can, man, to develop strategies to help our people. It's a project. It's a reclamation project. But I'm happy to say the more and more I see these things, the ASCAC conference, the DEOP conference, the thing Brother Montero is doing in reference to Du Bois. See, all of these conversations need to be had, because a lot of these men that were around in the past, they had strategies to try to move our people forward. Some of them made mistakes, and we can see through the course of history, and we have history as a teacher, we can see that the men made mistakes. They might not have realized it at the time. You know what I mean, Richard?
Oh, yeah, definitely.
But we can see that they made mistakes, so we can use what they did and build upon it, and don't make the same mistakes they did. Some of these quote-unquote leaders that we have, or self-appointed or whatever, leaders that we have, keep repeating the same stuff. You're trying to develop a strategy to help black people, and you get and white folks are involved. Nobody does that with other people involved in trying to reclaim and restructure and revitalize their people. Nobody does that. How are we expected to work? It's not going to work. They'll just end up throwing a monkey wrench in something later on. But we have the benefit of history to see that all of those different things that some of the men was getting other people's help on turned out to be a hindrance later on. And some of the men involved in those things realized it later on. Even with King, it's a perfect example dealing with King. And I think it was in 62 or 63, Malcolm basically lambasted all of them, the Big Six, and King was involved. But you can see that from a historical perspective, that King was being used by the other ones. Because when he started realizing what was going on and then speaking out against some of those things, he mentioned himself that it's people that don't want me to be involved in this. Now, he never mentioned who those people were. But believe me, the other big six, well, it wasn't because he was part of the big six. The other big five, you can best believe that they were telling him not to be involved with what he was doing. But he did it anyway. Then you could see that Malcolm and him started talking, trying to develop some type of working or operational unity. And then both of them was eliminated. We can't keep making the same mistakes about putting one person out there and figure they're going to help everybody. That's what the man wants you to do. Then he'll come against that one person, and then everything is busted up. That's not how we approach things culturally. It was always a body of people. A council of elders. It's going to be the same thing again.
You know, and you saying that, Elliot, one of the other things that I felt I walked away with from the conference, which I didn't know that, and I asked you and the listening audience, did you know that the AU had created a 2063 plan, which was their agenda for 2063, 50 years, right? 50 years from now.
Who did? And I'm sorry. Who did?
African Union.
Okay.
And the one piece that I'll just share, you know, and hopefully it ties to what you're saying, and in looking at their what they laid out. Now, the brother who I met there was, he's a adjunct professor at Howard University, Latif Tariq. And he said he just heard about it, that this conference was going on in Ghana, and he wanted to know, you know, what it was. And when he got there, he didn't know, you know, that the African Union had put together this kind of plan and had never even heard about it, that they have this 50-year plan. And the thing that hopefully it ties to what you just said, and it's that one of the elements, what makes Agenda 2063 different from the past continental initiatives, a bottom-up approach. There was extensive consultation of the African citizenry. This enhanced ownership of both the process and outcome of the initiative for having a continental agenda for social economic transformation. It is not the work of bureaucrats, but rather an agenda driven by the voices of the African people indicating what they want.
Mm-hmm.
Now, isn't that, I mean, but here they're working on that. And so it's going to be interesting to see in the point that you raised in relationship to South Africa, five states that want to rescue and then want to hold sanctions against the country because they're taking their land back because the people deserve the land in order to feed themselves, who've been deprived of it through the whole thing of the apartheid system, right? How will that affect the African 2063 plan? But the question is, and you raised it, well, the African-American bureaucrats, the political leaders, did you hear them present that this is what's going on there? Why we should be doing this here, what Brother Shabazz and others are doing, talking about the bottom up so that we can create this, our vision has always been when we enunciate the names of Malcolm X or Marcus Garvey, even Martin Luther King, who said after he came back from Ghana that we need to link up with them. But if we ain't ready, how are we going to link?
I know it. It's all about preparing, Richard. It's about preparing. So when you see a lot of these things going on, establishing a black political party, dealing with economics, see, all of these things is about preparation and preparing. When you hear us talking about politics, we're not talking about no Democrat and Republican type of thing where you get involved with this type of stuff like it's going to be here forever, because it's not. It's about a preparation for moving forward. This country is not going to be here forever. I mean, this man thinks it is. It's not. It's not. And if you talk about the world scheme of things in history, this place ain't been here. It's just a blip on the radar screen. And before you know it, it could possibly be gone, and maybe sooner than you think. Then what are we going to do? Be holding on to somebody else's bootstraps? These people that's so-called black leadership or misleadership class, as the Black Agenda Report calls them, they don't have no vision established for black people. None. Just rally black people to take over the house again so we can get the house back. Come on, man. You've been in the house too long. Some of our people have been in the house too long. And I ain't talking about no House of Representatives. I'm talking about the house, the master's house. They've been in the house too long. We can do better. There's people out here doing things, Richard. They're doing things. And we just need to develop a mindset. And when I say we, I'm talking about us as a collective. Mm-hmm. We need to develop a mindset where we need to get involved, be a part of it. And if I can't necessarily work with Brother Richard, then start something on my end where we can team up later on. Because the mission is supposed to be the same. If we want freedom for our people and sovereignty for our people, the mission is the same.
That's true.
I mean, Harriet Tubman wanted freedom for her people. So she developed a strategy where she would go back and forth and deliver as many as she could. Douglas wanted freedom for the people. So he was lobbying lawmakers and all to arm black folks with guns so they could free themselves. All of them wanted freedom for our people. They had different ways of approaching it. It's the same thing now, man. I mean, you got people out here. You got an 84-year-old brother that's been in the vineyards a while, and he's still a town crier, so to speak. You remember that old European that was a town crier? Went around just alarming, with the same message, alarming people, letting them know what's going on. Well, it's the same thing now. But the thing is, somebody's going to hear that town cry and then be springed into action by something that they hear. It has always happened historically. Let's grab one more, Richard, before we leave. Let's go to 470. 470.
Yes. Good afternoon, Brother Elliot. How are you?
How are you, sir? Turn your volume down. Turn your radio.
Yes. Yeah. I'm working on that. Okay, yes. Mm-hmm. Of course, I'm sitting back and enjoying the show, and as always, it's always a good quality program that you provide. The discussions that we're having, should be having, is what you're having, and I'd just like to add an analogy in which the mindset that we have to acquire,
okay,
and maintain. Because I have a mechanical background, I understand the reason why a car can get you from point A to point B. Because the moment you stick that key in that ignition, you start a process of turning electrical power into mechanical power. And then when you get able to travel from point A to point B, it's because in a vehicle or car, you got multitudes of parts. And they're doing their part. The reason why it's successful from getting from point A to point B is because the push rod is not arguing with the piston. The valve is not having a discussion with the exhaust. And all of these parts are playing a part to get you from point A to point B. So our mindset has to be just deal with people that know how to add and multiply and not subtract and divide. Then you're able to focus on your part. Just do your part and let everybody do their part. It has to be done in the collective. That's the only way for it to happen. Our suffering is in a collective.
Yes.
Our solution has to be in a collective. And I just want to add that to the discussion, brother.
That's great.
And listen, I thank you for your contribution.
Sure. Thank you.
Peace. He couldn't have put it no plainer, Richard.
There you go.
Couldn't have put it no plainer. Has to be a collective reproach. You know, that's why I'm so excited when I hear these type of things, like, you know, what Brother Malik is doing down there from the 18th, 5 days. Is something positive going to come out of it, Richard? It's going people going to be put into action based on what he's talking about and developing a relationship. I mean, we develop a relationship with him since we've been dealing with him. Where I can call him and get information or call him, and if I want him to express something, then he'll be on. That's a relationship. Because there's plenty of people that we call to be on here, and they don't even return your call.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't put it out there because, you know, those are things that we just deal with. And I've been dealing with it since, you know, we've been doing Time for Awakening. There's plenty of people that are out here that are black, because that's all I reach for to be on this program, is somebody that look like me all the years that we've done this program. Nobody has been on here that wasn't black. And some of the folks that you reach out to, they don't even return your call. So when you get people that do, and then establish a relationship with you, then you know that they're serious about what they're doing. Well, that's at least my litmus test. So, you know, we just keep moving forward, man. That's all we can do. The struggle continues, as they say. Richard, I just want to let the listening audience know, man, that Monday starts out the week on Time for an Awakening. Mondays, Wednesdays, and Fridays at 11 a.m. to 1 p.m. African Perspectives with Brother Oshi. Always an interesting program. Mondays, Wednesdays, and Fridays from 11 a.m. to 1 p.m. But Mondays is a full schedule on Time for Awakening, because at 6 o'clock, Acres of Diamonds with Brother Jihad Ahmed is on from 6 to 8 on Mondays on Time for an Awakening. And then afterwards, Let's Buy Black365.com Connect is on at 8 o'clock on TimeForAwakening.com. You can go there and see the live stream of their program on time. And plus, their podcast is up there. So if you missed any of Let's Buy Black 365 Connect, you can always go to TimeForAwakening.com and watch their programs. It's interesting. I don't know whether you've seen any of them, Richard. It's interesting.
Not yet. I've seen one so far.
Yeah, it's an interesting program that Sister Nataki and Brother Talib, and that, listen, young people, you're talking about young people. Brother Talib is he's a member of the Black Lawyers for Justice, and Brother Talib is 28, I think.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, you see what they're doing. And then listening audience can go to timeforawakening.com and look at some of their podcasts of their program. On Tuesday, we're scheduled to have the debut of Black Reality Think Tank with Dr. William Rogers Tuesday evening at 8 o'clock. On Wednesday, Revive is back with Sister POC from 8 to 10 on Wednesday evening. On Thursday, Ulu, a black economic movement. Their program is on Thursday evening at 8 o'clock, 8 to 9, Ulu, and then Friday evening. Time for Awakening is back at 8 o'clock on Friday evenings on Time for Awakening. Saturday, with Saturday Sports Talk, SST, Saturday Sports Talk with Brother Troy Wilmore, is on from 10 to 12. So it's things are growing. The messages are getting out there. I've received contact from another brother, too, Richard, that are interested in I've seen his program before. He's on terrestrial radio out there in Cleveland. He wants to be a part of the family, so I'm talking with him now. Hopefully things will work out. So, you know, the messages are getting out here. And, you know, this is what we do. This is what the program is about. So, listen, come to the end of another program. I want to thank everybody, and I thank our guest, Brother Malik Zulu Shabazz. Listen, go to the website and check it out. Be involved. Register for some of the conferences. Register to be involved. The Black Men's National Convention and 10,000 Men March is April 18th to the 22nd in Washington, D.C. Just go to the website and register and get involved. I want to thank everybody for listening to the program this evening. Lively discussion, as always, and we'll be back next week, Lord willing, to continue on this path towards an awakening. Peace.
If you're driving through the country on a lazy afternoon, or you're watching your children playing after school, they seem to be so unaware of, I know the things that they'll soon have to take care of. We've got to do something, yeah, to save the children. Such a small part of the things that they'll soon be right at the heart of. My little Tommy, he said he wants to be a fireman.
To save the children.